Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey, I heard you need an inspiration. He's a lot of end friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be a-okay.
Little known fact about my guest today, when he was only 3 years old, his family had to leave the Philippines and came to America because living under the dictatorship of Ferdinand and Imelda Marcos was impossible. And it is unbelievable that now, all these years later, he is starring in Here Lies Love on Broadway, a musical about the rise and fall of Imelda and Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines. He plays Ferdinand Marcos. His name is Jose Lana, and I'm so honored to have him on the podcast today. Welcome, Jose.
A-OK.
Hi, everyone. My guest today is Jose Lana. Jose currently stars in Here Lies Love on Broadway, the David Byrne and Fatboy Slim musical. He plays the role of Ferdinand Marcos. He originally created the role many years ago now at the Public Theater. He's been nominated many, many times over for his incredible, incredible performance. He also starred in The King and I at Lincoln Center. Some of his other theater credits include the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, El Gato in Wonderland, Rent, Saturn Returns, Oliver, Ballad of Little Joe, and so many more. Some of his film and TV credits are Sex and the City and Hitch. He is a best-selling recording artist on the Viva Philippines label. His voice can be heard on so many beautiful albums. He has lent his talents to so many projects. But I get to talk today to someone who I am going to fangirl all over, Jose Lana. I got to see Here Lies Love. I don't even know. I couldn't possibly begin to describe it to anybody. It is such a uniquely special, extraordinary show. I wonder if for the people who won't get to come to New York and see it, although there are YouTube clips that you can, that are pirated that you guys can see. Can you tell people a little bit about the show, and then we'll deep dive into your role in it and how it came into your life?
Well, you know, so the show is the story of Imelda Marcos, told in a disco club setting, basically. And David Byrne wrote it. He was inspired by like what drives a person of power to make the bad choices that they make. And he was interested because he heard that Imelda Marcos had a disco ball installed in her palace and in her apartment in New York City. And he found that fascinating. And he kind of thought, wouldn't it be interesting to tell her life story through the lens of a disco? And the disco metaphor is used pretty much as if the country under their rule was having a big party, basically. And the metaphor is used very specifically in that the revelers and the audience members who are standing and dancing with us, they are part of the storytelling. They're part of the electorate that elects them, that elects Marcos, my character, president. They're part of the funeral march. They're part of everything. And so I think it's what's really exciting is that the story is being told in a completely immersive way. And it's funny that when we used the word immersive 10 years ago when we did it at the Public, it was a very new thing. But now it seems like immersive is happening everywhere. I play the president, President Marcos, in that. Starts as a president, ends as a dictator. And it's a fun show, but it's also a history lesson. And I think a lot of people come for the disco and for the fun, and hopefully they leave with a little bit of an understanding of that hangover that happens after a party has gone a little too long.
Well, it's funny because for many Americans, I think who are not interested in history beyond their own, I think obviously they knew about Imelda Marcos because she was known for having like more shoes than most human, right? Yeah. But like the idea that, you know, the word dictator and shoes is sort of all people really knew. It is an incredible thing, sort of like the way Hamilton shares American history with people in such a unique way. Here Lies Love really does share Philippines history with its audiences, and in this incredibly, as you described, sort of the disco of it. I love that. I had no idea. I wanted to ask sort of what made the writers of this piece sort of center it in that way. I want to talk a little bit about your own, you know, in researching and reading about you. It's incredible how meta it is that you are doing this show. So if you would kindly share with my audience as much or as little as you care to share about your own history, where you were born, who lived in the home you were born in, and sort of how this story speaks so personally to you.
Well, I was born in the Philippines. My mother is from the Manila area. My father is from the north. Coincidentally, my father is from a very, very near the area where Marcos was actually from, in Ilocos. So I was born in martial law in 1976. My parents were very much the hot-headed activists, student activists of the time. You know, they were in college 65 to 69. So they were at the height of the kind of like youth movement in the Philippines that rose to be the anti-Marcos movement. So when martial law was declared in 72, my sister and I were born right after that, 74 and 76. And it became very clear that for particularly the middle class and the young students who were very vocal, it was not a safe place to be and not a great place to raise your kids. So there was a mass exodus from the Philippines, from a lot of intellectuals, of a lot of people who are anti-Marcos. And my parents found their way to first New York for a year. My first apartment as a young three-year-old was in Queens and Flushing. But then my mom got a job in DC, so I grew up in Northern Virginia. So this story for me, you know, 13 years ago, I should say, I got the audition to, well, here's the thing. 13 years ago, I was closing Wonderland on Broadway, and I caught wind of a new musical being produced at the Public Theater, a workshop about Imelda Marcos. And that perked my interest. And then I heard that Alex Timbers was directing it, and it was written by David Byrne of Talking Heads fame. And like, I wanted to work with Alex Timbers. I was a massive Talking Heads fan. And so I literally got my agent to say, please get me an audition for this. I want to go in for this. And from the first day of rehearsal, from that first workshop in 2011, I was very adamant, and I said, you know, I come from anti-Marcos families. My parents were activists. You know, you've cast me to play this part, to play the president, but I'm not going to be a part of something that's going to glorify them in any way, or celebrate them. And it became very clear what the story was going to be, and that they were not going to do that. And they wanted to tell the whole story and have the culmination of the show be when the dictators were brought down. And I think, it made me really proud to be able to tell a very specifically personal story. This show for me, for the past 12 years, my involvement in it has been a very kind of cathartic experience for my family. It's allowed us to talk about the trauma more. It's allowed us to reach out to family and friends to talk about it more, because I think that's the problem with trauma, and particularly the Filipinos when it comes to martial law. Because Filipinos historically have been, were masters of kind of like moving on, because we've been colonized by so many cultures, we are the masters of assimilation, like move to America, leave your culture behind and become American. Martial law has been kind of left behind and not spoken about because it was very traumatic for a lot of people. But if we don't talk about it, the mistakes of those of that time period are gonna will rear their ugly heads back, which is why it's so important to tell the story. And I think it's been a beautifully healing process for my family, particularly for them. They came 10 years ago at the Public numerous times. They were here for opening night for Broadway. And, you know, for my mom and dad to talk about their different experiences during that time has been really healing. And hopefully it's bringing the story to a lot of young, not just Filipinos, but young non-Filipinos to understand that the Philippines is more than just the shoes, you know, and specifically David and Alex, our story is literally right before the shoes were discovered. It's like we tell the history of Imelda, yeah, and Ninoy, and then the shoes were not discovered until they left and everyone invaded the palace. So our story ends right at that moment. So
there's a lot of it's funny, there's a lot of empathy in the storytelling as well, right? There's this idea of everyone was once a little kid, yeah, and sort of how does their trauma as a child end up influencing who they become as adults? What is it when you grow up a certain way and then have all this power, and what do you do with it? And the idea that, you know, I assume this is going to be something the creative team hopes to keep going, that everyone in the cast will be someone from the Philippines or of Filipino descent. It is the most incredibly powerful thing to be in a room with a group of people who all share some common DNA, not just as artists, right? But their history, whether it's directly the history that you share, which is, as I said, could not be more meta in terms of this is your family story, to I'm sure cast members who don't have the exact same, either because of age or where they were born, don't have the exact same thing, but also to be in an audience filled with people from the Philippines and obviously people not from the Philippines, but just to have the privilege to be in an audience where this story is being told in such a like sophisticated way. And then also, as you described earlier, like this is one of the most fun shows any people can go see. That's what's so wild. You're seeing history unfold in its painful, truthful, sometimes comedic, sung by the most glorious voices, and acted by the most incredible ensemble of people. And also, I need to shout out to David Korins, the designer, who just did something remarkable, and the projection designers and the DJ. I mean, it's on and on and on. It is unlike anything. And the fact that you were able to describe it so well is such a testament to how deeply you know this material. I want to ask you, because when you describe sort of growing up, you know, as a young person, having to escape martial law, having parents coming here, I don't know how big a community you guys had when they first came to Queens. Kind of who was here to greet you when you and your family came? And then who was the person really instrumental in helping you understand you're an artist and you have exceptional gifts and you must use them? So can you talk about all of that? Thank you.
I think, you know, Filipino immigration has been happening for a while in the States, you know, particularly because we touch on it in the show. You can't talk about Filipino history without talking about American involvement in Filipino history. Because when we were colonized by the Spanish for 400 years, and when we gained independence from Spain, it was actually, we were basically handed over from Spain to America, basically. Like, we were granted independence, but the Americans were kind of in charge still. And so starting from the turn of the century in early 1900s, through both world wars, the Philippines was a very advantageous place for the US to have a presence, because it put them in the middle of Asia, put them next to, you know, particularly even after World War II, having the naval bases in the Philippines was super strategic for them in terms of the Cold War, and also for Vietnam later, a couple decades later. So immigration has been happening for a long time in the US with Filipinos here. So when we came in the late 70s, the easiest place to find community for us was in church, you know, because we are a Catholic country. And so When my mom and dad were looking for a place for us to go to church, they asked around and found the largest Filipino population. And what church did they go to? We ended up going to that church, St. Bernadette's in Springfield, Virginia. And from that community, we found a lot of friends. And my parents, when the first house they bought in America was in a neighborhood with a dozen different Filipino families. So we had a community, which was so great. We were so grateful for. And it was that community of Filipino Americans freshly immigrated from the Philippines the same time we were, that we were able to watch all the news coming in from the Philippines, because we moved in 79. And the 80s was a tumultuous time in the Philippines. It was during the end of martial law, and the Ninoy Aquino was assassinated in 83. So for my family to be surrounded by so many other Filipinos while we were watching the news happening in the Philippines, and when it came down, it was a huge moment. And we kind of felt like that survivor syndrome, where we weren't there experiencing it with them, unfortunately, where, you know, here we are in the privileged luxury of living in America while our brothers and sisters are marching against this dictator. But I think leading back to the Here Lies Love, I think, and what led me to the performing career, the running joke is that Filipinos are born with a karaoke mic in their hands. And it's very true in my family. My dad is a singer, not a professional one, but we all grew up singing karaoke and for family parties. And I think we all found, you know, like I said, like Filipinos are masters at assimilation. I think we're also the masters of finding the bright side of things and not you know, wallowing in any kind of self-pity or self-doubt. So I think singing was always a way to get people together in the Philippines and here as immigrants. And I think you cannot overstate how important it was when Lea Salonga won that Tony Award for Miss Saigon. I think every Filipino who works on Broadway today, including myself, can say how much that right. meant.
They track it. They can track it to that. Where were you? Where were you when she won the Tony?
I was a freshman in high school.
Okay.
In Virginia. In Virginia, and I was already singing, and I was already doing a lot of theater, and when we're talking about representation, you know, me being part of an entirely Filipino cast, when we see young Filipino kids, to see the specific representation of yourself on stage and on camera and on television, it's so powerful. It's so powerful. And so when Lea won her Tony, I was at a very specific time in my young teenage life where I thought, oh, okay, and maybe I can do that too. And so my parents and I had a deal. I was going to go to New York for two years to try my hand. And I went to college at Manhattan School of Music, and I was going to be a voice major. I turned a lot of engineering scholarships. My sister did the older sibling does. She went and got her engineering scholarship. She went to Cooper Union.
Thank God. Yes.
Full ride at Cooper Union, full ride at MIT.
She can take care of all of us. Exactly.
And so let me be the artist, which is the privilege of the younger sibling.
Yes, yes.
And then I was lucky enough that my freshman year in college, Manhattan School of Music, they were having auditions for The King and I on Broadway in 96. And I went through a long audition process for that. And then lucky enough to start working with the amazing Donna Murphy. So I was very lucky. And Rodgers and Hammerstein was really kind of my ticket into this world. Yeah. And I'll always be grateful for that. I'm actually reading Mary Rodgers' autobiography right now, and it's fascinating.
It is fascinating. I feel like, tell me if I'm wrong, but we were talking before we started recording, because I told Donna you were coming on, and she was like, you are in for a treat, and I am. I feel like she told me she was like the reader in your audition, or that you auditioned together. You tell me this story, because you were there.
Here's the thing. I was a 18-year-old freshman, college freshman when I was being called in, and I was so, like, no one knew who I was. I was literally this college freshman, and I think Jay Binder, who was casting it, they said, we found this kid. Like, we found this kid. He's a freshman in Manhattan School of Music, and because they did not think they were going to find someone that young, like the actual age, because I was the age they were looking for. They were looking for a teenager to play this part. And they because it was not equity, they pretty much used me as a reader looking for a Tup Tim. Right?
You were the reader. Okay, that's right.
They kept, because they were like, we don't have to pay him. He's not union. So let's keep, like, let's not tell him he's got the job. So like I literally read with literally maybe 50 women who were going, they were looking for their Tup Tim. And I remember thinking to myself that this happens to everybody. Like I'm, you know, but it was clear if had I known more that they were trying to pair me up with somebody. But it was an extraordinary experience. And the fact that I was able to do my first professional job, happened to be this big Broadway show. And to have mentors like Donna Murphy and Lou Diamond Phillips, who are such kind, talented role models for any young person, you know, it was extraordinary. And to this day, I look to Donna just for, Donna's work ethic is one that I will always admire. Like that she does so much work before that first day of rehearsal that she comes with 19 options, you know, and she's able to play because she's done the work. And that to me is such something I try to live up to. Like I try to come to my first day of rehearsal with so much background and so many possible choices that I can just come and play. And that's what working with Donna was. It was just this, like, I just sat on the side and watched her work and being so green at the time. And then beyond the work on stage, it was the work off stage. You know, I tell the story all the time because I try to do this as often as I can. We had just recorded the cast album and had just gotten released, you know, and Lunta has two beautiful songs. It's kind of the best songs in the show, The Young Lover. And the day after the album was released, Donna and I make an entrance on stage right coming into the throne room. And, you know, at that point, I was still very intimidated by Donna Murphy. Like, you know, she's the star of our show. And out of the blue, I'm standing behind her. She turns around, she grabs my hand and she whispers, you're the best thing on your voice, something like your voice. You sound glorious on the album. It's the best thing on the album. Congratulations. You know, knowing it was my first cast album anything I'd ever recorded. But that unsolicited kindness and praise from someone that I looked up to so much meant, I'm about to start crying. Like it meant so much to me, so much that I remembered it forever. And to this day, whenever I'm in a company with a younger person who maybe he's a little insecure, maybe just needs a little bit of a boost. Or if I'm ever in a company where I honestly think, wow, that person's doing a great job today, or that person sounded fantastic last night, I will make an effort to go to that person and tell them that. Just to, by the way, you sounded great last night. You know, and if we all did that a little bit, we could just brighten up each other's days unsolicited and without any need for reciprocation. Our industry would be so, it would just, cause like that little bit of kindness, yeah. Just went to, I talk about it still 30 years later. I still talk about it like that. Right. She just turned around and said, you sound glorious on the cast album. And I'm right. Like, oh, you know, and,
yes. And that's Donna Murphy. Like there's no artifice and it is completely, from her heart, her generosity, there's no self-consciousness about it. Like, of course she would tell you that because it's true. And the idea that it still remains like this imprint on your heart in that way, it's really incredible to have leaders of a company like that early on. It just teaches us how it should be and that there's no need. We all get scared. We all get insecure. We all have tough days. But to keep remembering that it's about community and that is the thing that feels to me, to bring it back to Here Lies Love, that is like one glorious ensemble that we are watching. And the way the show is directed, everyone, I mean, there are obviously the leads, everyone gets a moment, but the idea that, just to bring it back, when Lea Salonga comes out, and it is such a surprise because you think, oh, she's going to be the star of the show. She's going to be in every scene. You know, she's really famous and really talented. And the fact that she is not on stage the entire show, But when she comes out, I don't think I've ever experienced anything like that. Like, it's like, I don't know. Yeah. It's like a rock star.
And the fact that they were able to harness, like the show's been that song has been in the show since the beginning, since 10 years ago. But the fact that our producers, our Filipino producers particularly too, realized that they had an opportunity, like there's this one song in the show where the show turns, the show becomes about something else. Because up to that point, the show's about Imelda Marcos, right? Up to that point. And I think the ability to harness the star power of our legendary Lea Salonga, who we, you know, unabashedly love and adore, but to not just use her talent, but her star power to signify that there is a shift in this storytelling that we're going on right now tonight. And you need to perk up your ears and listen to what she's singing in this song. It's genius, you know, and I have to give my producers credit for that and Alex Timbers, because that song had impact, huge, 10 years ago. But to have it be the star turn that it is now really adds weight to the shift in storytelling at that moment in the show.
It's glorious. And I just felt like, you know, everyone, I mean, if you're not standing already because you're on the floor getting to be a part of the show, it's hard to sit down afterwards. I mean, it's one of the most thrilling theatrical moments. And she's just a beautiful, beautiful spirit to get to behold.
And she's one of our producers now too. So she's not here with us right now, but she's going to be back. It's not really a secret that she's going to come back next year, before the Tonys. So it's extraordinary to have her. We've stayed friends since we did Flower Drum Song together. She went from being an older to my like idol to being my friend and co-star, and now she's my sister. Like it's an honor every day to ever be even associated with Lea Salonga. Like I said, my first experience with Lea Salonga was worshiping the ground she walks on, and
right.
I had her album as a child. Like she was like a this 10-year-old with like a voice, you know. It's a time, and I think, and to go back to what you were talking about, the cast, the Here Lies Love Company is filled with such an extraordinary number of kind, talented Filipinos. We've become such an instant family in a way that Filipinos, they call me Kuya, which is older brother or older male cousin in the Philippines, and Lea is Ate Lea, which is older sister. But because we're all specifically Filipino, and when I say Filipino, Filipino-American, all of our families have very different stories of how we came to this country, you know. There are a handful of the people in the cast who are born and raised in the Philippines, who are native speakers, and they have only been in America for a year or 2 years or 5 years. And then there are those who are third generation, fourth generation Filipino, where they haven't been as immersed in the Filipino culture as some of the others. I'm kind of squarely in the middle, where it's like I grew up here, but my family is still very Filipino.
Right.
And Lea lives there, you know, and so it's. But there's this instant family connection, and we've only grown closer because of it. And the speed at which we became a family was a real testament to the fact that we were all Filipino. And we lucked out. The first week of rehearsal was in the first week of May, and my birthday is May 5th. And I knew, and I kind of took the lead. I took the lead from Donna Murphy, Lineman Phillips. Like I knew I was going to be a cast leader in this company. I'm one of the older people in the company. I play the president, so I might as well take charge. I took my birthday as an excuse to throw a little bit of a party. So I catered lunch for the whole company with Filipino food 5 days into rehearsal. And it was such a great icebreaker for everybody. Like, and we gorged ourselves on big sloppy lunch of Filipino food. But I think it's such a joy to come to work every day because I feel like we have purpose. We're not just putting on a show, we're telling our history. Which is a profound thing to be able to say.
Wow! Yeah.
And a lot of the young people, who are second and third generation Filipino American, who it's a really cathartic thing for them to be able to reconnect with not something that wasn't necessarily part of their daily lives growing up here in America.
Right. Right. It's incredible. And I imagine, I mean, the writers of your show are not from the Philippines. So I imagine there's also been a lot of generosity on the cast part of right. sort of sharing stories and I imagine David Byrne and Alex and everyone really like trying to do due diligence in terms of coming to the story with tremendous research and tremendous openness to what, mm-hmm. you know, when you described early on, like at the public, I want to do this because this is my family story, but it can't be, it has to really speak to the real journey.
And that's where the big shift came from Broadway in that, you know, they've had a couple of goes at this already. Like we did productions at the public, they had London, they did the Seattle production. The biggest shift by the way, all those different productions, there was that openness and collaboration of they understood they wanted to respect.
Right.
The biggest shift that came from those productions to the Broadway production is that the producing team changed. It went from being an all-American producing team to an American and Filipino producing team.
Right. That so must feel wonderful.
We feel very protected, but we also know that the Filipino that decisions are being made from the very top about the marketing, about what story we're telling, because there's ownership to it. There's ownership to what story that we're going to tell. And the people in leadership positions are so specifically invested in telling an accurate part of our story.
Right. Let me ask you, and maybe there's many of them, but when you said you catered that lunch, like what are the best Filipino restaurants in New York City? Where should we be going if we want to like have authentic, beautiful food?
There's ton, but the way there's the mostly, unfortunately, a lot of them are in Queens, you know, because
that's
because
okay.
So many, right?
We'll but go to Queens.
There's one in the theater district called Tradition, Tradision. And it's a small little restaurant, but it's so good. And it's right on 9th Avenue and 53rd Street. There's a couple downtown in the East Village. Kasama is down there. And so there's also a great, it's not 100% Filipino, but it's Filipino fusion. And the chef, Leah, is Filipino. Okay. Pig and Cow and also Piggyback are her two restaurants. Okay. And a lot of Filipino food on those menus.
All right. How are you handling, before I let you go, and you know you have a little known fact to share coming up, so you can take time in the back of your mind, pretend you're listening to me as you figure out what it's going to be. How are you taking care of yourself? Like the show, this is not an easy show. This is full on physically and emotionally and vocally. How are you doing and how are you taking care of yourself?
You know, it's funny. I have to say, 10 years later, I take care of myself so much better now than I did because I'm 47. Mm-hmm. I think when we did this show 10 years ago when I was 37, I was still young enough to kind of be like, you know, let me go out and have drinks with my colleagues and this and that. Now it's like my husband and I are in our late 40s. I'm really about taking care of myself now because I want to call out anytime. I've yet to call out of a show, which is I'm very proud of. But I get a lot of sleep. I I'm a social person. Yeah, I like getting a couple of drinks here and there, but I have fully embraced the mocktail. There's this brand called Phony Negroni, which is a fake Negroni that tastes just like a Negroni, and it's
fabulous.
I buy them by the case.
Right.
You know, it's about getting as much sleep as I can, staying healthy because it's a very physical show, and I'm on stage with a bunch of 25-year-olds, so I need to be as
And guess what? I didn't know you look just like them. You look really damn good in this show. Yeah.
Thank you. But like I say, you know, I did The King and I in 96 and I was 19 years old, so let's we can do the math there.
Right? Here is math. Exactly.
So, wow. I try to take care of myself. And thankfully, my husband and I are at a point in our lives where we are no longer going out a lot. And we can focus on doing our jobs and having nice, quiet nights in. So,
is your husband an actor as well?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
It's too much crazy in one family. I think he is very much the quiet. He works in real estate developing. His name is Eric. And we've been together. We just celebrated our 18th anniversary.
Oh, my God. Oh my God, that's so beautiful. Well, in the Jewish tradition, 18 means chai and life, and it's such a lucky, lucky, beautiful.
Oh, thank you for
there's
letting
that
me
song.
That.
Yes, yes. In what is it? Fiddler to life, lechayim.
Yeah,
exactly. That
oh,
is the
great.
Number 18. It has mystical meaning and it has, biblical meaning. So
great.
Mazel tov, Jose,
thank
Lana,
you so much.
Eric, on your 18th anniversary. How beautiful. Okay. I know you don't have a matinee today, so I feel like you can really, after we finish talking, do what you need to do to take care of yourself. But what is a little known fact about you that you can share?
Well, I fashion myself a pretty decent cook. You know,
nice.
My mom, she was a secretary for a very long time. And then when she retired, she pursued her passion, which is cooking. And she got her chef certificate. She went to the Cordon Bleu Academy as a 50 something. So cooking is very much in my family. My father's a good cook. My sister's a really good cook. My brother-in-law is a fantastic cook. And I enjoy it. It's one of the things, you know, when they say, why do you cook? It's like, it calms me down. I'm obsessed with cooking shows.
Love it.
And like home improvement shows. Cause I like seeing something be created and finished in a 20 minute time period.
Yes.
Like when I come home from work, and I have about a half an hour or 40 minutes of television in me, I'll watch like a cooking show and it just like zones me out. But I love to cook. I love to cook for my husband and me. And I love to cook most for like family gatherings. So it's more than 8 or 9 people. And holiday cooking is my favorite. I go all out, like a whole menu, 10 sides, big piece of meat, and lots of gravy. So.
Oh my God, Jose. All right. Well, someday, I'm going to have a Jose Lana meal. I feel it. I'm manifesting that.
It's Filipino food too. Sorry.
Yes. Delish. I get to tell you in person, I saw Here Lies Love and, it just has stayed with me so deeply. It's remarkable. You are so beautiful in this show and you are just so, have such incredible ownership of a very complicated human. And you bring it to life in a way that is so deeply experienced by the audience. So thank you for your work, past, present, and future. And thank you for being on the podcast today. I'm so grateful.
If you talk to her before I do, please give Donna a big virtual hug for me.
I am calling her right now and I'm going to tell her, like, I mean, I knew it would be bliss.
Our last interaction, which she does all the time, I posted an anniversary photo of my husband and me, and she's always one of the first people to comment on Instagram. It's like, oh, you beautiful souls. Happy.
Isn't it the best? Isn't it the best? I know. We're so lucky. Well, have a beautiful day. Enjoy this run, this very long, beautiful run of an incredible show. Everyone go see Here Lies Love on Broadway, and you'll really be glad you did. Thank you, Jose. Have the best day.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Little known fact, now you can watch hours and hours of my interviews with your favorite artists as they talk about the art they love to make on YouTube. That's right, I have a YouTube channel. It's called Little Known Facts with Alana Levine. Catchy, right? Subscribe and enjoy. Little known fact, if you want to donate to the podcast, just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Thank you so much in advance for your generosity. Have a great day. Clouds can make the wind blow.